Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Bold, Beautiful, Borderline podcast. My name is Lori, and today I am joined by Monique, all the way from Australia, who is going to be talking about the things that she's learned going through this whole BPD life, and particularly around relationships, which I'm very much excited about. So, Monique, do you want to just tell us a little bit about yourself and why you're here?
Yes, so I'm Monique. I'm 38 years old. I am only, I think, 5 months diagnosed with BPD, CPTSD, and ADHD. I've got a 17-year-old son, which is amazing. He's my world. What amazing. Else would you like to know?
Yeah, so we talked a little bit about before the episode. You had said that you really want to talk about the importance of healing yourself before getting into relationships. And I was saying, like, I think we've all been there in terms of being lonely and just wanting to, like, get into it with somebody else. So do you want to tell us a little bit about where that realization came from for you?
Oh, definitely. I didn't realize it until I got my diagnosis of BPD, because I've always, since leaving school, been in a relationship. Or when I'm not in a relationship, I'm doing everything I can to find a relationship. And I didn't understand that. I always had my family saying, look, you keep rushing in and give me a hard time about it. And I didn't understand it was actually the abandonment that I'd suffered from when I was young with the BPD that was making me not see red flags. That's a massive thing. So since getting my diagnosis, I've been watching a lot on narcissism as well and rushing into relationships. And it's caused a lot of pain. Like, a lot of the relationships I've been in, I felt like they were actually broken. And when I've gone into them, I've tried to fix them, but it's, you can't fix anyone until you fix yourself, I've discovered now.
True that. Yeah. And we can't force other people to fix themselves either, which is always something we want to do, but very difficult to come to terms with. Do you want to tell us a little bit about, like, the abandonment you experienced when you were a kid?
Okay, so when I was 2 years old, my dad had cheated on my mom with her best friend. So he left us when I was two, and he got a wife, they had kids, so I'd go and see him in school holidays. But then when I was 11, my mum passed away from cancer, and I had to go live with my auntie and uncle who had 5 kids because mum thought that was best for me. I wasn't taught or taken through therapy of the losing my mum. And when I moved in with my auntie and uncle, because they had 5 kids, there was no nurturing towards me after that. So I was a single child, and I felt like I didn't fit in the family. I felt like the black sheep. And then in year nine, I went and tried to live with my dad for a year, which that didn't really go down too well due to issues going on at the age of 16. So I went to boarding school, and basically I felt like I've been on my own and not having a proper family since I was 11 years old, not having that nurturing love. And my dad is amazing, but he is quiet and he's a bit different. He has different ways of showing his love. So I've always been the one reaching out to him, and it's never been reciprocated. Mm-hmm. So I sort of felt like when he got his new family, well, that's his family, and I'm just an added one onto that. So right. I'm 100% sure that's where my abandonment has come from.
Well, and losing your mom, who was your essentially only caregiver at 11, I can't even imagine how much that would affect your abandonment now, because I'm sure that, I mean, I don't want to project onto you, but, like, I would assume that you're always like, oh, is somebody else going to pass away and leave me alone as well? Not just, like, yeah, abandon you on purpose, but, like, also abandon you physically too.
Exactly, exactly. And also the way I'd found out about her passing was the wrong kind of way. It was just because one of my cousins had answered the phone and they just blurted out, Jenny's passed away. So I've been dealing with my psychologist, actually, since I've got my diagnosis and that, and we're touching base at the moment on that I haven't properly grieved my mum, and to get through and become a better person, learn from it and go back and feel it all.
God, that must be very hard. Like you said, you're 38. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
So what, 26 years later, to go back and to really like process all of that, what is that looking like for you or feeling like for you?
It's interesting because what's funny, I'm a big TikToker. I go live and all of that. And I actually connected with a lady on there as friends. And I didn't actually know that she did tarot cards and was sort of kind of like a medium. And before I met her, like a week before, I was talking to my psychologist and we were like dealing with, well, this is what's happening. I'm like, I don't remember my last conversations or anything like that. And she's like, well, you need to work on that. And I also felt a little guilt because I remember being young and seeing her in the hospital sick, and I got scared at one stage and I went and spent a little more time with another patient. So I always held the guilt over that, but I'd never actually talked about it. So a week after having the conversations with the psychologist, and none of that was mentioned, she said, look, I've been getting messages for you. And she's like, I'm seeing the numbers 1111. So I'll never forget you and you. And I'm like, well, I was 11 when she passed away and my date of birth is the 11th. So, and Never Forget You by Mariah Carey was mom. And pretty much I feel like my mom reached out and gave me that never forget me. So it's still hard. It's still processing it all. I look back at the BPD once I had the diagnosis, and it's that love that I've always been searching for in anyone as a family or anything. So that's the part that was always missing.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. Wow. And how did your BPD diagnosis come to be? I find there's usually like a triggering situation.
So I after getting the diagnosis, I realized I pretty much had it since I was young. Like even when I was told, like when I was with my auntie and uncle, I used to tell so many lies and get myself in trouble just for attention. And I'd be told that I was over dramatic and all of that. As a kid, I had ADHD, but I stopped taking meds when I was in year eight.
Sorry, just to clarify for us North Americans, year eight is like eighth grade of school. Yes. Okay, perfect. Sounds good. Just want to make sure that we're all Americans say it different than Canadians, which is where I'm from. And then you're saying it different. I just want to make sure that it's what we're all talking about.
Definitely. You forget about that when you communicate with overseas.
Totally.
So where was I? About a year and a half ago, I split up from a partner, the very last partner, and I moved out on my own. And I had to give away my 14-month-old dash hound as well. And then I started feeling chronic pain and I didn't have anyone around. And I started to isolate because I was in so much pain. I'd be going to the hospital and the hospital would say, it's just pelvic congestion and your IBS, and they'd send me home. And that went on for a year and a half, and I pretty much just stayed in bed, watched TV, and I had no interest in anything at all until a lovely lady from Vinnie's came. She'd seen me through it all, and she's like, look, I think you've got mental health issues. So she asked me to admit myself to the hospital, the mental health unit, which I did. It was so scary, and like in the public system, it is, you're just put in a room and they just give you all these meds. And it made it worse because I was in a room and then I was having to take all these different meds. I wasn't getting out of bed for that week that I was there. But luckily a spot came up in a private clinic under a public patient, which was a 3-week program. So it was good in a way because it was like a 5-star resort there. Like they had buffet lunch, buffet dinners, buffet breakfast, and you actually interacted with other people and you could get out for 2 hours a day. So when I was in there, we'd have two sessions a week with a psychiatrist, and then we'd do group therapy. I didn't really understand what the psychiatrist was doing, as it seemed like I was just being put on medications. He wasn't looking into what was going on or anything like that. And then the group therapy, the one thing they went wrong is you didn't have a psychology session after that. So what I found is all these triggers came up: abandonment, being put down, relationships. I've been in a DV relationship as well. So all these triggers flared up while I was in that. And then it came to 3 weeks and they're like, your 3 weeks is up. We need to send you back to the hospital because they'll be able to help you more. And I just lost it because I'd made that my safe space. So when I started going out to the shops and that, I'd actually have massive panic attacks. I would literally shake, but I'd push myself every day to get out of there and do it. And I felt like my safe place was taken away from me. And I went back to the hospital and they said, oh, no, we've got to put you on another antidepressant. Mind you, I was telling them the whole time that the antidepressant they'd had me on was making me worse.
Which one was that? Do you remember?
The Effexa.
Okay. Yeah.
And they're like, oh, no, you've got to wait the time. You've got to wait the time. And I'm like, it's making me worse. Then I went to the hospital and they just wanted to add more medication. And in my head is like, I hadn't got a diagnosis. The psychiatrist I was seeing wasn't telling me what was going on. I was just being put on medication. And I had no understanding of it. And I went back to the hospital and they're like, well, we don't think you are suited to be in the long stay here. So we're going to add this antidepressant and you can go home in 2 days' time. And I turned around and I said, look, I'll go home today. I'll change the medication. Right. If I have any problems, I'll go home. And so I did that and I had a lovely, amazing support woman from Wondell Mental Health that got linked up with me. She takes me to groups. She helps apply for disability pension and everything like that. She gives me that support. So eventually after being out for 2 months, I was actually going and having coffees with the group. People are going through the same things that I were, but I still didn't know what it was, what was wrong with me. And throughout my whole life, I've always felt like there's something different about me. I'm too much for people. No one understands me. And I feel like I'm always that different person and no one's going to, everyone just walks away. And then I finally got a really good psychiatrist through Dr. Teller on a Zoom meeting. And on the first session with him, he diagnosed me with the BPD, CPTSD and panic. And then on the second session, he diagnosed me with the ADHD. But I didn't know what BPD was at that time. I'm like, oh, okay, what's this? And then I started reading about it and I'm just like, my whole life makes sense. And each diagnosis, I can pin it back to certain points of what one was interacting with it. Because also it was the interaction between the ADHD and the BPD fighting against each other. And why I say that is because I used to go into jobs and I couldn't keep a job. I couldn't pay attention to detail. I'd forget stuff. But then I remember always feeling like I don't like being told that I'm doing something wrong. I panic if I'm doing something wrong. And so the boss would come around and there'd be a little complaints. And then I figured that was my BPD brain, like telling me, oh, you're useless, you're not good enough. And I beat myself up for it and to the point where I'd lose the job. So that affected me in that sense. And because the psychiatrist said I've got the quiet time. Because when I read it, I'm like, well, I don't lash out. I'm not an angry person. And that was the image that I sort of saw when I first had a look into it. And he's like, no, you've got the quiet time. You lash out at yourself. And I'm like, that's exactly right. I am the hardest person on myself. If I make a muck up, I just get down on myself and it brings me really down. Or why am I not good enough? Oh, it's because of this.
Have you ever had that angry streak, like throughout your life, even before the diagnosis?
No angry streak, really. Like, I get frustrated in myself.
Yeah.
And I'll just, yeah, move myself away. But I haven't actually lashed out at anyone else. Mind you, when I lose something and I can't find it, and then I find it in a spot that was just stupidly ridiculous, I get cranky and I'll like throw it down on the floor and just be like, damn it, how could I be that dumb? Like, it was just
right. Like, but not like kicking holes in walls, kicking down doors, hurting others. Yeah. No. Okay. Yeah. I just find it's interesting. Like, for me, the anger and the violence was huge when I was untreated and undiagnosed. And I just find that it's, over time, in a lot of people, it seems to go away naturally. So given you got your diagnosis a little bit later than most people did, I was curious if it had kind of started earlier and then had gone away by the time you got diagnosed. And you said that you kind of, somebody else recommended that you go to the mental health hospital or mental health ward. So had you never like struggled with mental health that you were aware of prior to this time?
I'd been triggered for depression after the DV relationship that I was in for a year. And I was seeing a psychologist at that time. But see, that's when I mucked up, because I think it was, 2-3 months out of that relationship, I met someone and I rushed into a relationship and I told the psychologist, I'm all better now, everything's good.
Classic. And love it.
Yeah. So I didn't continue. So I was just put on antidepressants to deal with that incident. And then 2 years into that, I found out he'd been cheating on me most of the time. Yeah. And we had, the thing that I accepted about the relationship was we had no arguments. Yeah, he did go catch up with his mates a lot, but I wasn't getting physically harmed. I wasn't getting run down or anything like that. And I had someone there. But the worst thing was that with his family actually became my family, and I actually felt like part of a family. And that.
Which you really hadn't ever before.
Yeah.
Like until your mom had passed. Yeah.
Yeah. So it wasn't just that when he, I gave him another chance. And then right before COVID hit, he took off and he said, look, I can't do this. It's not working. So then that's when I was at my lowest, because I felt like I lost family. I lost him. I couldn't leave my house. And I guess all the stuff from the DV I hadn't dealt with, and I'd actually tried to take my own life. And having my son, I didn't even think about him at the time, because I'd lost so much and I had no way to deal with it, that I'd actually tried to do that because I felt so broken. And after that, I got a little bit of help. It wasn't much. It was just put on antidepressants and I got on with my life. And then again, I rushed into another relationship. And he had a daughter, and I was sort of a stepmom, and I was giving everything. You know how us women with BPD, we give everything, we want to do everything, we care so much about the person we're with. I base myself around them, and I have changed myself to suit the partner, so they don't lose that, so I don't lose them. To be honest.
Yeah, that's part of that like sense of self issue. That's one of the diagnostic criteria. And it's so easy to do, because you're just like, yeah, like I remember there was this meme that I saw once. I'll try and find it when this episode comes out. There was this meme of like a person on a first date or whatever. And the guy's like, oh, wow. Like, I can't believe how much we have in common. And then the girl with BPD is like, yeah, because I've tailored my entire personality to match what you have, what you're into or whatever. And it was just so funny. And it's like not even intentional.
No, it's not. It's not. I would do it. I look back and I'm like, I'd do it without even realizing it. I'd just go along with what they were interested in. And then I'd be interested in it because I wanted that person. And I'd search for that. And I guess it was the abandonment, like the abandonment of my father, the abandonment of my mom, and just always feeling that emptiness and something missing in my life. Another sad situation was I have a 17-year-old, so I was with my son's dad. He's Indian, and this was when I was 20, going on 21, I rushed into that relationship and we actually got a celebrant marriage very quickly, 6 months into it, and I didn't tell my family about it. And actually that night of the wedding, I realized I'd done the wrong thing because he went out with all of his friends that night and left me alone in the hotel. And I just had that feeling of, what have I just done? I've made the biggest mistake, but I can't tell anyone. And I just stayed with it. But a month later, I fell pregnant. So, and the saddest thing is when I found out I was pregnant, you know what my first thought was?
What?
I'm never going to be lonely again.
Ah, yep.
That was my first thought when I found out I was pregnant. I'm never going to be lonely again.
And I don't think that's uncommon either. Yeah, definitely, definitely not a good reason to have children. But I know that like many people have felt that way before. I mean, I don't even want kids. Like I'm 30 now, and like I just kind of know that that's not in the cards for me at this point. But even when I was like 18, I remember being with someone and being like, well, if we had a kid, then he couldn't leave me. And it's like,
yeah,
holy
exactly
shit,
right.
That's not true. Like, I'm
exactly
very
right.
Glad I did not get pregnant because of that. Oh, my God.
Oh, goodness. Yeah.
So, you know, you talked a little bit about the relationships that you've gotten into, you know, maybe too quickly or like for the wrong reasons. Where are you at now in terms of your like romantic life and focusing on yourself or focusing on somebody else?
I'm not seeing anyone at the moment. I'm focusing on myself. My psychiatrist said to me that I should not be getting myself into a relationship for a long time till I've healed. And I've had people tell me, yeah, you've got to heal yourself. A beautiful quote was, you can't go into something new until you've healed yourself from that broken relationship, because you're only going to take the broken parts and bring it into your new relationship. So you actually need to heal yourself before you go into another relationship, because with BPD also it can cause problems in the relationship that you have from past relationships too.
Totally. Although, will this, like hypothetically, when you start dating again or whatever, whenever that happens, if that ever happens, will that be your first relationship since a diagnosis?
Yeah, oh, I've seen someone, but it's been on the case where we see each other once a week, so it hasn't been a full-blown relationship.
Right. Because it might be helpful. Like, no, I'm not trying to convince you to start dating right now. Don't get me wrong. I totally agree with your plan. But I'm just, once you have that awareness and the other person knows about your diagnosis, it is more helpful most of the time. Every once in a while, you'll get an asshole who breaks up with you because you have a diagnosis. I've had that happen before. But I mean, the self-awareness of where some of these problems stem from is always helpful too.
Yeah. So a fear for me is for you, like when you had your diagnosis, how did you feel when you'd go into a relationship having to explain you have these conditions? Because my fear now is, no one's going to want me. I've got all these mental health problems. Who's going to want me?
Yep. Yeah, great question. So I got my diagnosis at either 18 or 19. I can never remember. So I was quite young. My triggering event for the diagnosis was actually a breakup, as it is with a lot of people. And so I was probably single after that breakup for about a year and a half, kind of dating here and there, but I was so fucked up in the head that I just like, there was no way I was going to be able to even like pretend to date anyone. And then I got together with somebody who was not a very good dude. And we were like on and off together for 2.5 years. And I didn't tell him about my diagnosis because there was so much shame and stigma and all this stuff. And he was not a very good dude anyways. So about like, I think 2 and a bit years in, I finally got up the courage to tell him, and he used it against me and dumped me. He basically was like, you know, you're the, what did he say? I said something, we were like arguing, we argued all the time. It was a horrible relationship. And then after, like, you know, the day after I told him or whatever, he was like, oh, let me guess. It's just like borderline personality disorder, AKA the exaggeration of fucking everything. And like, I was like, dude, I'm the same person that I have been for the last 2 and a bit years that we've been together. And like, now you're going to throw this in my face. Like, anyways, turned out it was kind of a blessing in disguise because he was a douchebag and I definitely needed we needed to break up with each other. And we were kind of like addicted to each other in like a really toxic way. You know what I mean?
Trauma bonded.
Yeah, exactly. So anyways, it was actually a blessing in disguise. Then I dated a lot of other people kind of casually. And I actually met my husband in school, like in university. And in the class that we were in, I actually was open about my diagnosis. So before we started dating, before we were friends, he knew about my diagnosis. And then he would Google it and was like, this doesn't sound like the person that I like have seen in class. You know what I mean? And so he was able to kind of bypass a little bit of the stigma because it wasn't as personal for him at the time. He was like, oh, this person's really interesting in my class. I'm going to Google it. And then was like, that doesn't really make sense. And he just was kind of able to get over it. And so I think if I were to date now, I would be more open about it because in my opinion, what's the point in dating somebody who you're not comfortable telling? You know what I mean? I would rather know that they're going to abandon me because of my diagnosis early than late.
Exactly right. Yeah. Exactly right.
But it does happen. I mean, I can't lie about that. Like it happens for sure. But also, you know, we call our like peer support group super feelers for a reason because BPD makes us better people. And so if the people around us can't understand that, then like we don't need them. There's others out there. And also being by yourself is totally justified too.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, my personality is I'm such a loving and caring person. Like if I've got you as a friend in my life, I will do anything to help you. Somehow I have this effect on anyone I come across that I can get them to open up to me their darkest secrets, and I can talk them through it and I can give them advice and all of that. But when it comes to myself, I can't. I'm just like, I don't see that sense. And yeah, and it's sort of funny, like all the relationships I've been in except for one, it was a long one, but it was, I think we were just too young at the time. It wasn't the right time for us. I've had all these broken people and I've tried to fix them all, and almost every single one not long after me has found the right one for them. So I feel like, damn it, I've got some healing power and the next person gets that. But I do the work and I put up with all the pain and someone else gets to benefit from that. It's not fair. But it's because we've got that emotional side to us, like empathy and how deep we connect. And when I actually connect with people, I connect on a different level.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, you're not connecting superficially, that's for sure.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Which is really good because I've made my TikTok account and I've made it BPD, CPTSD awareness. And I've actually got people coming on there. I'm jumping on lives with people and talking about mental health and helping them through, but I'm more helping them rather than them helping me. But me being there and talking to other people than stuck at home by myself is a lot better than that.
Yeah, and you can be connected to people in a platonic way, right? Like you're connected to your followers, you're connected to other people in the BPD community. It doesn't have to be romantic to be a valid connection and to not be alone, right? Even if it feels that way, because our brains trick us into that.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Have you ever been to peer support?
No. What is peer support?
So peer support is really where like we come together, and so the Super Feelers Club is an option of peer support. There's many out there. I don't know off the top of my head what options there are in Australia, but I'm sure we can find some. So the Super Feelers Club is basically people come together, they have BPD diagnoses or they have like adjacent challenges, right? Like struggles with like strong emotions. You don't have to have a diagnosis because the diagnosis process is so flawed. But most of our participants have BPD just because of the podcast and all that stuff. And they basically come together and help each other out, right? So you said like, oh yeah, I go on these lives and like I'm usually supporting others instead of them supporting me. And I think that's the beauty of peer support, is that you can do both. And so, you know, somebody might share that they're struggling with something and you can be like, oh, wow. Yeah. Like I've struggled with that too. This is how I was able to help, like, you know, work through it or whatever. And then vice versa, they'll be able to share some insights with you.
That's my alley. Like, that's exactly like, I want to get that back. And then I hate putting my problems on other people as well.
Yeah. And it's a safe space to like, not put your problems on other people, but like, it's a safe space to share what you're struggling with and everybody gets it. And that's the difference, right? Is you can tell your, you know, your best friend or whatever, or your son that like, you know, I'm struggling with this, but if they don't experience the same intensity of emotions and like challenges with abandonment, it doesn't feel like you're being validated like it does when you're talking to other people with BPD.
And what's the worst thing is the bad stigma with BPD when you tell people about BPD, because they said the bad side. Like, I think it was a video of Marsha Hines I've actually posted on my TikTok where she says, if you have BPD and you go to the hospital, do not tell them that you have BPD.
Yeah.
Because we will not put the time in. And I actually felt like, I look back at when I was had the 3 weeks in the sessions at the clinic, because the psychiatrist has said to me that we may keep you in for an extra week. And so that was in my mind. I didn't know what was coming up. And on the day of 3 weeks, he sent me home, he promised me a report so I could put it through to DSP. To this time, I still not have received a report. And after doing all my research, I think he may have picked up that I had BPD and he thought he couldn't help me. So he just pushed me along.
Yeah, which unfortunately happens all the time. I mean, if I have even physical health issues and I go to a hospital, I'm very selective in what I tell them. And, you know, the haters out there will say like, oh, that's being manipulative. But no, it's called survival. And if I come in with a physical health issue, I am not going to disclose my BPD diagnosis unless I have to, because I know, and it has happened before, where I've been completely discredited before they've even checked for a physical health issue that was there.
Yeah, so, like my experience of going back and forth to the hospital for a year and a half, like they assumed I was there for other reasons. And I'd go and I'd be sitting in a waiting room for like 7 hours. And I'm like, I wouldn't put myself through that if I wasn't actually feeling this physical pain.
Yeah.
But I think looking back at that, because I actually thought I was going to die. I thought the hospital's not going to help me. I'd written a letter in case something had happened to me and the hospital weren't caring about it. They were just putting it down to these two conditions. They'd only do my bloods and everything because they'd already done CT scans. But the sheer fact that they didn't even think about mental health at all in that year and a half, that created my panic and the outlash of me having my complete breakdown and all come crashing down.
That's super interesting. Yeah, I guess it goes both ways, right? Either they can ignore the mental health issue or they can focus too much on it. And either way, it's not like kind of a holistic look at people's wellness, which would include physical and mental health.
That's right. And I think it was the BPD, the panic of no one's going to help me, which took over completely. And like, the hospital's not going to help me. I'm on my own again. This is the first time since I left home that I've been living alone without a boyfriend or a flatmate. And yeah, it's just funny looking back at it all.
Yeah, so much like extra insight once you realize what all's going on, right? What is treatment looking like for you these days? Are you in therapy? I know you said you're on some medication, I think.
So our system, mental health system, is a pain in the butt here. So we only get 10 free psychology sessions a year. And I've used all of those up. So I haven't seen my psychologist for 2 months. So I won't be able to see her until January. I see the psychiatrist once a month, and that's just a Zoom call. That is the best way. Like, when I went into the mental health unit and I saw the psychiatrist, I didn't know the difference between a psychiatrist and a psychologist. So I started opening up to him like a psychologist and looked like the biggest idiot, because he's like, no, just answer my questions.
Right.
And I didn't understand. But then when I found this psychiatrist, he was just so amazing and understood, and he wrote everything down, and I had the diagnosis like within that day, which is pretty lucky, because a lot of people, when they start going to find out what's wrong with them mental health wise, it takes years to diagnose. But he'd actually diagnosed it instantly.
Actually listening. Like you said, oh, well, I looked like an idiot because I was talking to the psychiatrist about my, you know, history and trauma and all this stuff. And it's like, but also a psychiatrist should care about that. They're not supposed to just be robots to dispense medication. It just depends on the psychiatrist.
That is the worst thing, because they had me on so much medication when I was in there. I was on Effexa. And I think they pushed it up to 300 mils. I was having Valium for the panic attacks. They were giving me Seroquel slow release, 50 milligrams, and then 150 milligrams at nighttime as well.
Oh, wow. So 50 in the morning and then 150 at night?
Oh, no. They, at 6 o'clock at night, they give me the 50 slow release. And then 8 o'clock at night, they give me the fast release.
Holy shit, you must have been sleepy.
Yeah, I was.
Yeah,
I
like was. A zombie.
But I wasn't, when I got in there, so that's what saved me, because I made sure I got myself out of bed, I cleaned my room, and I got out and I talked to the other top patients there. Like, I just, that's what fixed me of getting out of my hole. Although just recently I'm starting to sort of feel myself pull back a bit from the groups. I've been avoiding going to the groups. I think that might be because I haven't been doing my psychologist sessions, so I'm not talking everything out. So rather than going out and being social with people in real life, I'm doing it on TikTok, which is very helpful. I have made some really beautiful connections on there, some amazing women it's funny that you can actually find connections with people on an app.
Oh, yeah. This podcast started because of Instagram. Still, Sarah and I have never met each other, and it's been 3 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You didn't know that.
Yeah. Wow. So, like, the internet can build very strong connections that are very valid, for sure.
Yeah. Like, at one stage, I was calling someone my BPD sister, and, like, I've got a few people that have BPD on there, and we can relate. And I've actually got a friend that actually, I think she has BPD, because she's the exact image of me, but she's more, so I'm not, I've never self-harmed, and I've only had 2 suicide attempts, but the thought does go through my mind, but I wouldn't try it again because my son pops up in my head now. Mm-hmm. Like, there's days where I just wish that it'd just be over. I didn't have to deal with the pain. I didn't have to deal with all of this emotions and everything. But then I tell myself, no, I've got my son. It was only when I'd have those broken relationships. And the first time was when I was in the DV relationship, which that one damaged me more than anything else, because all the hurtful things he said about me, I still tell myself that I'm that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that stuff doesn't go away, or doesn't go away easily at the very least.
And that's the most damaging thing for someone with BPD, to be in a domestic violence relationship or an abusive one, because we take on what they have said to us and we tell ourselves that. And whereas someone that doesn't have it can tell themselves afterwards, well, no, that was them and that's not you. But it's the hard point of actually believing that, like, when everything has gone wrong in your life and you're still alone. Like, my mum passed away of cancer on her own at the age of 39, and she died alone. And my thing is my fear is I don't want to die alone. I don't want to be in a bed at any age by myself.
Yeah, and you're almost that same age as your mom was. So that's must be a very, like, emotional and strange feeling, I would think.
That's why I was thinking, like, maybe I've got cancer and they can't find it. That's how panicked I was.
Mm, yeah, that health anxiety is real for sure. Yeah. That happens for a lot of people with BPD, I find. It's really interesting. I don't know if it's because we've never, or like because the health system has caused us so much harm, maybe, that we don't feel like we're being investigated properly. I don't know what that is. I've never really thought about the reasons before, but I have a lot of health anxiety. I know another person who's been on the show a number of times has a lot of health anxiety. You have health anxiety. Like, it seems like a very common experience, which is interesting.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
So what do you want, just as we wrap up here, is there anything that we didn't talk about that you really want to share with the audience?
Medication-wise, so at the moment I've been put on Zoloft. Finally, they listened to me and took me off Effexor, and oh my God, going through the withdrawal of the Effexor was horrible.
Really?
Like, I can understand why addicts can't give up give up taking it now, because I was having brain zaps and I was just really not good. So they've moved me onto Zoloft. So I've just been put up to 150 milligrams morning. And then because I've got the ADHD, they've just started the Dexys, 5 milligrams twice a day, but I'm not feeling anything different about that. And I've been on it for 2 months. So
oh, wow. Okay.
Talking to my psychiatrist about to see whether we put it up a bit or anything. Then I'm on 100 milligrams of Seroquel, the slow release at nighttime, and then 100 of the fast release at nighttime.
Interesting. I was on Seroquel for 11 years and I did try the fast and the slow. I think I ended up with just the fast, but it's an interesting technique to take the slow release and then the fast release for the same purpose. I've never heard of that.
I don't understand it. Yeah, I don't understand it. It's just what the hospital piled on me at the time.
Is it working?
It is, but it's not. I'm still getting... It stopped working now. Like, mainly it was to try and help me sleep.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm also on prazosin because I was having really bad nightmares.
Mm.
So... after coming out of the hospital, all those triggers were coming up in my nightmares. So they've got me on that. I think it's sort of, I've become immune to it now, really.
Yeah. Yeah, that can happen. Like, I don't know that particular drug, but Seroquel, I love Seroquel. I'm not on it anymore because I wanted, 11 years is a long time. I really wanted to see what life would be like without it. But there are many nights where I miss it, and which is probably not a good thing, because that means that I like probably was more addicted to it than I thought I was. But it's a good drug to help you sleep for sure.
Yeah. Well, previously before having it, I'd sleep 2 hours a night.
Totally. Because like, your brain just wouldn't shut up or.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So my brain is just constantly running. I can't meditate because my brain is constantly running, and that's what everyone's like, I'll go and do meditation, it'll help. And I'm like, if I could get my brain to stop talking between itself, then I would, but I just can't. I've tried it so many times and it just doesn't stop.
Yeah, they say practice makes perfect on that kind of thing, but it drives me nuts most of the time because I'm the same way. That's why I was on Seroquel too, is because my brain just could not shut up. The only like meditation that I find to be like helpful is yoga. And even at that, in like a 1 hour yoga class, I probably spend like 55 minutes ruminating on something and then going, no, stop ruminating. You're supposed to be mindful. And then there's maybe 5 minutes where I'm like, oh, I don't know if I was thinking about it. So it's like, certainly not. Like, I do yoga all the time and it certainly isn't like something that I can just turn my brain off the whole time, unfortunately.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And I just remember when I was in the psych, the private clinic, they were trying to get me to slow because I was panicking about everything every day, like so much panic when I was in there. And they're like, just slow down. Okay. Make a to-do list of what you're going to do today. And the funny thing was I wrote it down and they looked at it and they're like, you're putting way too much detail into it. Like, just put little small points. You're putting way too much. And I'm like, but that's how my brain thinks. Like, I'm
totally,
I'm not thinking about the now. I'm thinking about this, oh, this, that, and then it's the emotional, why am I not good enough?
Yeah, I do to-do lists like crazy. And then I get stressed about the to-do lists that have dates that I was the one to set. And it's like, but you could just also not set those strict to-do dates and then you wouldn't be stressed about it. And it's like, well, fuck you. And then my brain just talks to itself.
Yeah, it's like, oh my God, and no one understands. Like, I tell people I'm an overthinker. And then in relationships, you overthink too much. I'm like, I've told you I'm an overthinker. What do you not understand about that? I feel like I try to get more reassurance and I don't get it. And then they get frustrated at it. And it's just like, well, I've got an overthinking brain. Like, I can't help it.
Yeah. Some people just, if you don't experience overthinking in like an extreme sense, people don't get it because they're like, but just don't think about it. And you're like,
well, yeah, exactly.
Like, of course I don't want to think about it, but like, that's not a thing that can happen.
And like when I was going through, a perfect example was my younger stepsister. She said she suffered anxiety through school. Like, so she was trying to be my support person when I'd come out of the mental health unit, and we actually connected a lot more than we ever had. But she'd be like the tough love. Oh, well, just don't do that. Just think of this. Just go for a walk. And I'm like,
yeah, no
in
shit.
My brain, I'm like, seriously, you do not understand. It's not an easy click. Like, and
no, then you would, like, do it if you could, but you can't. That's the whole point.
Yeah. I'm like, I love you, but I'm end up stop talking to my sister about it because it was just frustrating me. I'm like, no, I'm not getting anywhere with it. I'll just keep it to myself.
Totally. I think you would love peer support. I really do. I like, just based on this conversation, I feel like you would be such a good fit for it. You would just, it's like all of the things that you aren't finding with the people in your life currently, I think you would find in peer support. So I would highly recommend you looking up a peer support program. Doesn't have to be Super Feelers Club if you don't want it to be. That's all good. But any peer support program.
I think I have looked at it on the website, on your website, but I haven't actually looked into it or known what it was. So.
Okay. Yeah.
Amazing, like
you would love it. Seriously, I think you should totally do it.
And that's why I love TikTok, because people like come and tell their problems, and I'll actually give them my message, like DMs, so they can come into my DMs, and I actually talk a lot of people through. And it's funny the type of people, like some people will be like, I don't actually get in other people's boxes. I've been a creator for 4 years. I've been a gifter for 4 years. I'm a mod for these people, and I don't actually connect with anyone else, but they've seen my integrity and they'll get in the box with me and they will talk to me. And I'm like, wow, I'm special. That makes me feel a little bit special that out of everyone on TikTok, you're coming to me. Like, and that's sort of uplifting me a bit as well, that people are recognizing that in me.
Yeah, absolutely. What's your TikTok handle again? BPDCPTSD?
The proper name is BPD underscore CPTSD underscore awareness 12. But the nickname is Dr. Monique BPD CPTSD awareness. But that doctor will come off of it. Like, in 7 days, it's just one of the little trend things of being in a team on TikTok.
Okay, right. It's just like your partnership with that doctor. Gotcha.
Yeah.
So, awesome. And then okay. Well, I will I'll put them in the chat or in the show notes, sorry, so that people can find you. And then we don't have a TikTok account, but we can tag you on Instagram.
Yeah, that would be amazing. That would be amazing. And I'll send you my TikTok account, because that's what I'm going to be working on the next few weeks, is trying to make some content for my TikTok account to help more people through it, because it takes a lot to find the right information. But once you get that information that you can click with, and all the different types of information, like getting past that stigma stuff, because at the start I read about it and then I'm like, oh, just throw it away. I don't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
But then through videos, you find other stuff and you don't even realize it. So I feel like I'm still learning about BPD by seeing other people's content.
100%. It's always a learning journey because everybody's experience is so different, right?
They are. Awesome. They are. We're not the same person, but we all understand it's that emotional versus, oh, I'm doing DBT introduction at the moment as well.
Nice. Awesome.
It's not the full program. It's just an introduction, but my psychologist will be able to do the DBT with me after it.
Like in January. Yeah. Perfect. That's amazing. You'll love DBT, I'm sure. It's so helpful. Totally changed my life.
But everyone knows.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Monique. It was so nice to chat with you. Really appreciate you sharing your story with us.
Thank you. And like, you girls, what you're doing is just amazing. Like, the minute I found your podcast, I was in love. Just feeling like you are understood and hearing other people's experiences, it really does make a difference.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. Awesome. Well, have a wonderful day. I know it's early, not early morning, but it's morning for you. So I hope you have a good one. And yeah, we'll be in touch.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, friends. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Bold, Beautiful, Borderline podcast. Lori and I are so grateful that you're here with us on this journey, and we can't wait to dive into more topics in the future with you all about borderline, and even have some more fun and exciting guests to join us on the podcast. If you really enjoyed this episode, we would love if you would rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen. We would also love to see you interact with us on social media and on our Patreon page. The links to that are included in the show notes, so check us out there. We would be incredibly honored to get to know you all as you get to know us and our recovery stories. We love you, and we'll see you next time.